please listen carefully.
Hello, world, and welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Christy Jansen.
And I'm Summers McKay.
And we are part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of news media and the direction of your day to one focused on solutions.
6 days a week, we publish positive news stories written by award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And now, obviously, once again, because you are listening on your favorite podcast app, we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, home office-worthy, quarantine-worthy, have-you-done-your-morning-yoga-Christy-worthy podcast. Today is Wednesday, April 29th, 2020.
And no, Summers, I have to admit, I haven't yet done my yoga practice. It's just been one of those mornings. I opted to spend a little bit more time reading my newsletters, so I ran out of time to do my yoga practice yet. But I will. I'll do it as soon as I can.
I was going to ask, have you been keeping up with it?
Yeah, I've been doing it every day, just not every morning.
Well, you are very impressive. I have managed to start logging more steps every afternoon. I take a break from work. I get out there and go for a really long walk with my daughter. And I've been getting my steps in. And yesterday, I felt like Jane Fonda on a stroller because I was doing dips and kicks and on the sand doing side kicks and jumps in front of the baby, and she found me very amusing. I'm uncertain as to the total value health-wise, but it felt like I was moving in a healthy direction.
Whatever works. I've been running up and down my stairs every day at least 10 times, so that's part of my exercise routine as well. All right, well, here are today's top solutions, and we start off with one following up from yesterday, or from Monday, I believe, when we were talking about New Zealand. This comes from the health section in the Optimist Daily. COVID-19 has been eliminated in New Zealand as the country eases restrictions. It was just a couple of days ago that we published a story in praise of New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern. Guiding a country through a pandemic has been a high-stress task for any political leader, but Ardern has shown the world how to stay calm with her clear, personable leadership style, exemplified by the informal live Facebook call she does with citizens from her living room. Beyond Ardern, all of New Zealand responded rapidly to the spread of COVID-19 and took precautions, like closing borders early on. The result is that now New Zealand can say it has achieved its ambitious goal of eliminating the coronavirus, but the country is not celebrating yet. Over the past few days, newly diagnosed infections have been in the single digits, and on Monday, New Zealand reported just one new case. Monday was the final day of almost 5 weeks of strict level 4 lockdown measures, which New Zealand's Prime Minister described as the strictest constraints placed on New Zealanders in modern history. On Tuesday, the country eased into less restrictive lockdown, with 400,000 more New Zealanders heading back to work and 75% of the country's economy operating again, according to Ardern. The new level 3 restrictions also mean that New Zealanders will be able to hold small funerals and buy takeaways. But while New Zealand's success in eliminating the virus might seem like cause for celebration, Ardern has told citizens, "We are not out of the woods yet," urging them to continue cooperating with the newly relaxed restrictions. For all of us, the takeaway is that there will come a time when lockdown restrictions will be eased, even if it doesn't feel like it. And in the meantime, we at the Optimist Daily will keep bringing you positive updates from around the globe as they happen.
It's so good to have this to look forward to. The leadership of New Zealand has done a brilliant job, and the people of New Zealand have also done a fantastic job in working together to get this done. So I look forward to that happening in the United States and elsewhere in the world. There's going to be a lot of changes, though, as we come out of this. Christy, and as you and I have talked before, and certainly we've discussed with our staff, many of whom are in the university system, COVID-19 could change the future of higher education. This next story comes from the education section of the Optimist Daily. It's safe to say COVID-19 has radically changed most of our personal and professional lives. For many college students, shutdowns have provoked a change in learning style and an eviction from campus housing. We discussed some of the implications for college students in our last Optimist View over the weekend, which is delivered to our emissaries. But what about colleges themselves? How will higher education institutions be permanently changed by the implications of the pandemic?
two professors, Vijay Govindarajan from Dartmouth College and Anoop Srivastava from University of Calgary, analyzed what life might look like for post-COVID colleges. When it comes to lectures, they note that keeping large lectures online could actually pave the way for more efficient face-to-face time learning. With the foundation of course times occurring online, in-person meetings could be reserved for critical discussion, guidance, and fieldwork. This would also reduce the time required for students to be physically on campus and lower infrastructure costs, making college more affordable and accessible for a wider population of students. Ingraining more virtual learning into universities would require expanding IT infrastructure. The rapid transition to online courses has already highlighted the holes in campus technology capacity. COVID-19 has called attention to the digital divide that exists between high and low income students. So colleges would have to just address this disparity to expand online education. Even in a large lecture hall, professors can assess whether students are engaged and absorbing the material, but it's harder through a screen. If our technologies are not advanced enough to capture these nuances, what changes need to be made to enhance virtual communication? Lastly, students and faculty habits and behaviors will need to adjust to a more virtual future. Are students willing to give up their college social experience for a lower price tag? How can we truly engage students through the screen? What keeps students from surfing the internet or checking their email during an online class? Professors will also need training in how to best mobilize online tools to become confident in presenting and sharing data and visual aids in an online platform. When it comes to changing our higher education systems, COVID-19 has thrown us into the deep end of online learning. While online communication and education platforms such as Zoom, Khan Academy, and Coursera are thriving, many students and professors are simply not. COVID-19 may just be the event to finally disrupt the inaccessible nature of higher education in the U.S. Online learning alone is probably not the ideal way to impart wisdom to future generations, but the pandemic is teaching us how we can mobilize technology to improve our education systems, even after shutdowns are lifted. Christy, as you know, I taught both online and in classroom for UCLA and UCLA Anderson. And I found that teaching online in the time that I was doing it was so much more difficult and really not a meticulous way to help students learn. I had less of an impact on students, definitely through online courses. One thing that I did note, though, was that those students who were really engaged and open to the technology and committed to communicating with me through various online tools, they got just as good of an education as the students in the classroom. So I think evolution happens on both ends, just not only from the teachers becoming more adept at the technology, but also the students developing more technology communication skills so that they can get more out of it as well. We're definitely going to see a change ahead.
Well, I do think that it's going to be incorporated however it can be, because this is definitely the future. I think it works better with high school and college students. I think for early education, though, in-person is super important. And that's going to be, I think we have to really find ways where we can have in-person teaching for younger students, which I know this is not about that, but I'm very curious to see how this goes in the future, because having that in-person face-to-face contact is essential for especially early development.
Wholeheartedly agree. It's just going to be a change across all the spectrum, but one that we can certainly see a lot of tools coming out for, and I think teachers and administrators are working really hard to figure out. So
good things ahead. Speaking about how new technologies are in the process of being adopted in ways that they wouldn't necessarily have been before COVID-19, from the technology section on the Optimist Daily, UPS is going to use drones to deliver medicines to a retirement village. After first announcing drone delivery collaboration last October, UPS and CVS pharmacies are pushing ahead with their vision for aerial shipments of medical goods. Announced on April 27th, the next phase of this partnership will see UPS drones deployed to carry prescription drugs from a Florida pharmacy to the largest retirement community in the United States. UPS is making some significant strides in its efforts to integrate drones into their business model, along with other forward-thinking solutions such as electric bikes and electric trucks. Last year, the package delivery company won approval from the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, for what it calls a drone airline, allowing it to fly unlimited amounts of drones, operate the aircraft at night, and let them carry larger loads than the typical rules allow. This followed an exemption that allowed the company to introduce a routine delivery service carrying medical goods in North Carolina last March. UPS says it has now completed more than 3,700 flights as part of that project, using Matternet M2 drones. And these aircraft will again do the heavy lifting for the company's latest high-flying initiative. The drones will be loaded up with prescription medications at a Florida CVS pharmacy and flown less than half a mile, which is 800 meters, to a designated drop-off point near the Villages, a retirement center housing more than 135,000 residents. From there, a ground vehicle will complete the last leg of the journey. The new drone delivery service is set to begin in early May. And Summers, as we've been watching this unfolding over the last few weeks, the ramping up of drone deliveries, robot deliveries, the removal of people in that last leg of contact from getting goods from point A to point B. It's been interesting, and this is a great idea, and it's always been happening, but it does make me wonder, what is it going to look like in the future when we don't need people to be in those roles?
I know we keep revisiting this. The drones are coming, man. We are not going to avoid it, but I agree that even though we have to embrace that the drones are coming, there are some infrastructure situations that need to be addressed, as well as human-to-human contact. I do, however, think that our multitude of amazing delivery people who are servicing homes all over the country right now are invaluable, and I imagine that they wouldn't mind not having to interact with my dog every day. So I don't think Cleo will chase away a drone, although she might.
Well, I don't know. In my mother's neighborhood, they were talking about how the crows had captured a drone and they had taken it up to their trees. And that was one of their new sort of pets. So the crows might not be very friendly to these drones flying around.
The crows are like, you are mine and I shall call you Squishy. Yes. Oh, all right. Well, lots of change, and change can be good, even if it's creepy drones delivering my prescriptions. Next up, from the energy section of the Optimist Daily, Britain has now gone over 18 days without using coal energy. Coal's daily share of Britain's power has faded away rapidly over the past few years. Whereas coal produced at least 50% of Britain's energy most days of the year in 2012, coal has hardly contributed to the grid this year. In fact, the UK has gone without a coal-fired power generation for its longest stretch since the Industrial Revolution, breaking the existing record of 18 consecutive days this morning. The 18-day stretch has broken the UK's previous record, which was set on June 4th, 2019, partly because of a collapse in demand for electricity during the coronavirus lockdown and because of a greater use of solar power. On Monday, the demand was forecast to fall almost a fifth below the usual levels in April, according to the data. The lower overall demand for electricity means low-carbon energy sources are able to make up a greater proportion of the energy system than usual. The collapse of coal and rise of renewable energy sources has led to a drastic reduction in carbon emissions from the UK power sector. Since 2012, the average carbon intensity of the grid, the number of emissions required to produce 1 kilowatt hour of energy, has declined by more than two-thirds, from 507 grams of carbon dioxide to 161 grams. Pretty good news.
That is pretty good, Summers. And it's also really interesting to see how the interaction between the lowering of demand and the raising of alternative resources is really shifting the emissions in this energy sector. And I think that there's implications for that in other areas as well. I love watching this, and the fact that the number of emissions required to produce 1 kilowatt of energy hour has declined by more than two-thirds in the last 8 years, that's tremendous. And we just have to keep that transition going.
Well, we say it over and over and over. Mother Nature sent us home to think about what we've done. And boy, are we coming up with solutions.
All right. Well, our final solution for today, which is from our environment section, is also based in the UK. Wales plans to plant a new national forest running the length of the country. In the following years, the Welsh landscape is expected to benefit from a significant increase in forestry thanks to an ambitious government plan to plant a new national forest running the entire length and breadth of Wales. Backed by £15 million, or $18 million, of woodland creation grants, the new fresh national forest will create areas of fresh woodland and help restore and maintain some of Wales' unique and irreplaceable ancient woodlands while also boosting tourism. The idea is that people would be able to walk the entire length of the forest from one end of the country to the other, drawing inspiration from the Wales Coast Path, which attracts millions of visitors a year. At the same time, the green boost is expected to make the country's landscapes more resilient to climate change by helping prevent flooding, improving air quality, removing harmful greenhouse gases from the atmosphere, regenerating soil for food, and providing home for wildlife. This is a multiply positive solution-based approach, and it's a great one, Summers, and it reminds me of the Green Wall of Africa, which is a line of new vegetation being planted along the edge of the Sahara Desert, and that increases the biodiversity of those regions, it increases the productivity, and makes that area even more livable. I just love these green, resilient forestry projects.
Right, there's the million trees, I think, that was in Pakistan. The more of these that get done, the better for our earth. And
it's actually a billion tree project in Pakistan. I think absolutely. India has been doing a lot of planting. All of these planting, now they take time to really develop, but it's amazing how quickly you can reclaim and regenerate land if you just put some energy into it.
Well, I love to see all of the energy getting put into healing our worlds, and thank you all for your commitment to the Optimist Daily and your commitment to making this world a better place. Thank you for listening to the Optimist Daily Update today. We promise to continue to share positive, solution-based stories with ideas on how you can participate in this changing world and ensure it is changed for the good. We promise to cover the current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, and offer you the information needed most to chart new paths for all of us.
And please consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com or sharing this with your friends and helping them become emissaries if you're already supporting us. And for just $5 a month, support reader-funded independent journalism. Be a part of the solution-changing consciousness and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving mindset. Thanks so much, Summers, and thanks everybody for listening today.
Thank you again, Christy. Thank you all. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Have a great hump day.